Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Well, hello, Egg Chasers, and welcome to episode 3 of the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast with the normal squad. I'm Tim. We've got JB.
Hello, Tim. Hello, Egg Chasers.
We have got Blake.
Hello.
No, hello, Egg Chasers.
Well,
I like that as a format.
It's fresh this week and it's getting quite late, so I'm trying to move things along, you know.
And we've got Phil.
Hi, Tim.
And hello, Egg Chasers. Right, State of the Union then. What's been going on? Well, more developments, although it's going to rumble and rumble. English and French clubs have put forward a new Rugby Champions Cup. Right, I've tried to summarise this, and correct me if I've got any of this wrong. So, the English and French clubs have got together, they've registered a domain name for the rugbychampionscup.com. They claim it's going to be merit-based qualification for European competition, even distribution of money and more money. Irish teams have said they're not going to accept the new competition, and even the French Rugby Federation have said they're going to veto the deal. There's one little grey area in terms of dollar, and that is that English teams have signed up for a TV deal with BT Sport, despite already being contracted with Sky Sports. So that could get a little bit messy. What's going on? Where do we think this one's going to end?
It's just a mess at the moment, isn't it? It sounds like
it comes to something when Progress is registering a domain name. I can't believe you kicked off because they registered the domain name. What else have they done? Twitter account?
They've picked a name for the competition.
That's a good point. We could make a bit of money. Genuinely, you could make a bit of money if you get twitter.com/rugbychampionscup. I'm going to try it now. See if it is actually on account.
Yeah, I'll do the Facebook. Please. If the rugby gods are smiling, we could be Rugby Champions Cup Twitter.
There is a good chance this tournament will never make it, so...
That page does not exist! Seriously, right?
Register.
Should we just agree a profit share on this? We could start just doing spoof tweets.
Can our little icon just be a sack of money? And then can we also do real Rugby Champions Cup? What are you going for, Rugby Champions Cup?
Bollocks. That was such a good idea.
So close.
Oh. Somebody has got at Rugby Champ Cup, which is the closest, which I just tried to get. And they've tweeted, "Greetings from the new Rugby Champions Cup. Their location is certainly not Dublin."
Wow.
And they say, "We were thinking of using the national jerseys of each Six Nations side after dousing them in petrol." So they're kind of on the same vein that we were on.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Well, that went a bit flat after all that. But, so what do we make of it anyway? Let's get back on track.
Don't really care now.
Yeah, I know.
Phil, you've got strong views on these things.
Not anymore.
I'll jump in and say that I think in rugby terms, I'm a bit of a socialist. That I kind of don't think the biggest fish should eat the most food. I think the smaller fish, and in this case that's the Italian teams and then the smaller nations, I think the smaller fish should be brought up to weight for the benefit of rugby in general.
A lot of fishing-based analogies there,
yeah.
Tim.
Do you like that?
That's all right. I am kind of with you. However, I'm more of the NFL-style capitalist socialist, which is that if you're going to have teams in a competition, they've all got to be of a certain standard and of a certain strength. I've got no time for this tiered nonsense.
By which you mean like the Amlin Cup?
Yeah, and then, what a waste of time. Who watches the Amlin Cup?
But it's development for the teams that play
Not interested
it.
At all.
No, you don't have to watch it, but it develops and brings funding to the teams that play in it. Otherwise, they're just going to starve and die.
I think that the tier system can work in a way where you can't actually move between the tiers. So your workers having your lower tiers that are all just feeders to your higher tiers.
Exactly. The Amlin Cup now is almost something to do for those who aren't quite good enough to get into the knockout stages of the Heineken Cup. Complete waste of time. You want to make sure that they're properly revenue sharing and properly competitive. Otherwise, the whole thing's a farce. And actually, it's okay for the French and the English to whinge about how the game in the Celtic nations in Italy has been run, because I think that's fundamentally what the argument is here. They're not happy that those teams get to rest their players and basically just concentrate on the Heineken Cup, whereas their players are beating each other up in the top 14 in the Premiership week in, week out.
And the funding is
disproportionately
split.
Yeah, the funding's a bit odd too. If you're going to have it, you need them all benefiting equally.
Yeah, which is what the new proposal suggests.
All right then, so it's going to rumble on, so I'm sure we'll talk about it at other times. Let's talk about a bit of actual action on the pitch. And, well, let's just talk about a North Walian, Jay. George North, and that incredible fleet of foot and bit of skill to set up what could and arguably should have been the winning try for Northampton in the game of the weekend in the Aviva Premiership against Gloucester at Kingsome. What a bit of skill.
He was incredible. More importantly, Luther Burrell, second game in a row now, he's played really well. Now, I've seen him play at Leeds. I've seen him in the flesh play at Sale. Who gave him the licence to be good? Because he's never been good before.
He's always been good in one dimension, going forward very fast. But he's now worked on his all-round game.
He's really good. I can believe it. He must be knocking on the door for international, well, Saxons at least. I was very impressed.
I think he did tour Argentina with the depleted elite squad.
The other takeaway from that game is, has anyone noticed, we've already decided that Gloucester have got the worst kit in the Premiership. Did anyone notice Gloucester's awful, awful sponsor? It looks terrible on the shirts.
Oh, MagnaClean.
Oh, no. Wow.
MagnaClean's their main shirt sponsor. That's terrible.
I wasn't even thinking of MagnaClean. I was thinking of Obis. They've got Obis all over their sleeves.
Who are Obis?
Obis Oil?
Obis Oil.
Sorry. Compared to Northampton, who have very manly Travis Perkins building supplies.
Hey, George North, let's talk about that bit. I mean, we saw it in the Lions, and then just, is there anyone else that could do that?
I don't think there's ever been a big man with such good feet. I mean, they're all...
Yeah, it's the change of direction as well.
I mean, they're all contemporaries at the moment who are probably as big, say, Banahan, but with nowhere near the skill and the step. Maybe Israel Folau can
and
push him.
The acceleration as well, for such a big bloke.
He's a big slice.
He's a big old slice. But on the flip side, that wasn't the winning try that he set up, because I watched it, and I don't like giving referees stick, because I think you get what you deserve in terms of referees, and if you slag them off, then less want to do it, and then you get worst ones at the top level. But that was such a shame that it ended like that. Martin Fox, I'm going to name you Mr. Fox. He ballsed up on the timekeeping, because there should have only been about 6 seconds on the clock. There were four or five Gloucester players in front of the kickoff, which he could quite clearly see and didn't blow up for. And then the scrum, the ball came out clearly at the back. Ben Morgan pulled the ball back in.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
And then he gave a penalty for something or other, which didn't look like it was worthy of a penalty. And Gloucester stole the victory. So here's a question for you then. Terrible displays of refereeing. It can be from your own career at whatever level, at whatever age.
Oh, wow.
I think I was playing with both Tim and JB the time we were playing the arse end of nowhere, and it wasn't a nice place, and we live in an industrial estate.
Kirby Lonsdale?
No. That's a lovely place.
Hoylake.
That's in Cumbria.
Hoylake sounds like it should be nice, though.
Yeah, and about 10 minutes into the game, the ref was like, oh, I don't know if I can keep going. And then 15 minutes into the game, he abandoned the game.
Yeah, Hoylake, you expect rolling, you know, like rolling hills, and you get there and like, well, where's the lake? There's nothing. It's like
a big concrete industrial lake.
Yeah, on the back of a milk packing factory or whatever it is.
Phil, you've played at some good levels.
I think I'm like you, Cocker. I try not to have a massive go at the referee. I think it tends to even out. You occasionally get a few more decisions that seem to go against you than the other team, but I can't really pick one.
There's not a losing team in the land that doesn't go for a beer after this and goes, that referee was great. It's the same chat across every
club. You're so right.
Blame, like, accept some responsibility for your own team's actions and your own team's failings rather than automatically look to the
spoken record. Like, see, that's a man that's earned money from playing rugby.
That's right.
That's the professional.
That's a guy who's been media trained.
And that was amazing. That's what, to be fair, Jim Mallinder, well done. He came out and he did not mention the referee. He just said, we've got to control what we can control, and we, you know, we didn't do some things well, and we've got to go away and make sure they're better. Yeah.
That's exactly the response that Heinrich Meyer, the South African coach, had when the ref, like Romain Pouad, gave some pretty dodgy decisions against them, against New Zealand.
I'd applaud that. Although I am going to moan about one from when I was under 17s, Berkshire County Cup final. It was Newbury, my team, against Windsor, playing at Windsor, and it was 8-8, and it finished a draw, which meant that we had to share the trophy. And the referee in the last minute gave a forward pass against us when one of our guys intercepted a pass from them.
Wow.
So they passed it. One of the Windsor players passed it. Our guy intercepted it through for a try, and he said, forward pass. Scrum Windsor. I was just spewing with rage.
Windsor? That sounds like quite a posh team.
Yeah, you play right on the pitch below Windsor Castle.
Wow. Kind of like Hoylake.
Right, then, that's enough George North and referee, and then let's move on. And let's cross codes for a minute. See, Blake's already getting well excited now. And Sam Tompkins, the Wigan Warriors player, has been signed for a world record fee in rugby league by NRL side New Zealand Warriors to play for the next season. So, Blake, I don't totally know, and I'm sure a lot of rugby union fans in the UK wouldn't know. What's union and what's league like down under?
I've just came back from playing all summer there, and to be honest, the standard wasn't that much higher for the league I was playing in, but the culture that surrounds it, it's just insane. I mean, they fill out a 90,000 seater stadium for State of Origin, which is effectively like Lancashire versus Yorkshire, and if you can imagine trying to fill out a 90,000 seater stadium for that. Yeah, everything, it's just so popular, league especially, but I think the biggest issue that union has in Australia when trying to compete, they don't really have an Australian competition. They have Super 15s, and then they immediately drop down to not a great standard. I got asked to go play there, so it's not that great.
So comparatively, New Zealand have got the ITM Cup once the Super Rugby season finishes, which is, if you ever watch the highlights, it's a very good standard. And South Africa have got the Currie Cup.
Yeah.
Australia, like as Blake's saying, don't have comparable
competition. They have feeder clubs in local competitions, and that's it.
So would rugby league in Australia be like football is here?
Well, I was going to make that point. I think whatever's called football in a country is the biggest sport in America. If you say football, obviously you mean American football, and here if you say football, you mean soccer.
Do they call cricket football in India?
I think they do. I think that's
no. They call kabaddi.
if you say football in Australia, everyone immediately thinks that you mean league, especially if you're in near where I was, around Sydney or up on the Central Coast and parts of Queensland.
He is officially the world's most expensive rugby league player. So here's a question for you then: who is the most valuable rugby union player on planet Earth, if there was like a bidding system like there is in the cricket in the IPL?
Now, this is interesting because I kind of prepared myself for most valuable club player for their club.
Yeah.
But are we asking who's the most valuable player full stop?
Well, you can come up with whatever justification you want. What are you getting at? That like there'd be a reason why Dan Carter might not be the most valuable.
Yeah.
Because New Zealand are wrapping him in cotton wool and only letting him play a handful of games.
So, for instance, Canterbury, not the Crusaders, but the Canterbury club who he plays for, they see him once every 3 years, something like that.
Yeah.
Like in the final.
If he's coming back from injury at exactly the right time where it coincides with one of their easier games.
Exactly. Well, I'm braced for ridicule, but I'd say someone extremely valuable.
Are you going to say someone Welsh?
No, I'm not. No. I'm going to say someone English, and I think he's extremely valuable for whichever club he plays for, and he's showing it again. After two close losses, I think London Wasps are a lot better team for having Andy Goode there. And I know everyone's going to laugh, but every team he goes to, he makes a huge impact.
I'll just make one point.
And he plays every game.
They've lost 3-3 in the league since he's been there.
But I hope, A, that you're going to edit this out. And I hope, B, you can recognise that Wasps have come very, very close to both Harlequins. Who was the one last week?
Sale. They almost beat Sale.
Yeah, who went and beat Gloucester and also beat...
And lost to Newcastle.
You know, he's got an awful team, and I think he's actually made a big difference.
Ridiculously.
And he's not the most valuable player in world rugby, Andy Goode, ladies and gentlemen. Well,
okay, I misunderstood. Okay.
Ridiculously, Andy Goode has actually made it onto my paper when I was debating this, simply because I was trying to split it down by first of all saying, if we are looking at club players, it can't be anyone who plays internationally because they're missing for half the year. They miss 10-12 games a season. And so then I was looking from a back's perspective at who scores the most points. If you're looking at the English league, the fly halves that scored the most points most consistently over the last few years are the likes of Andy Goode, Charlie Hodgson and Nick Evans, who, for the points they score for their clubs, particularly in important matches, there's definitely an argument that could be made. I would probably have the other two ahead of Andy Goode.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, Nick Evans would be extremely valuable. Yeah, Nick Evans is probably...
Yeah, that's the name down on my list. I went, like, Will Genya because of the crucial position, obviously. But then, like you say, if you were a team or a franchise shelling out, you'd lose him for half the year. But, George North, exactly the same. I went, you know, we saw at the weekend just how much of a game-changer he can be. I wrote down exactly that, Nick Evans, because I thought, pound for pound, is there a better player playing in a top league who isn't an international?
Isn't a current international?
Current
international, because there's a couple in the French league. Luke McAllister, potentially.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say Brock James.
Brock James.
That's a great example of it.
Wilkinson.
If you think how much Johnny Wilkinson is worth
his brand,
the shirt sales would go through the roof for any team that would buy Johnny Wilkinson.
What a depressing way to judge a player, though, isn't it?
You're absolutely right.
But that's the Henson. That's what arguably one of the reasons why.
So are we agreeing after my initial ridicule that Andy Goode is the third most valuable player in the Premiership? Because if so, I could live with that.
There's probably a few more up there. Going back to France, though, so Wilkinson is the highest paid player in the league. €672,000 a year he's on. Slightly more than Johnny Sexton. But the top performer, if you look at the stats, certainly of last year, was someone who featured on the website. What's the website again, Cocker?
www.eggchasers.com. Well done, Phil.
Rory Cocker, the top point scorer last year in the top 14, and he was also the joint fifth highest try scorer from scrum half.
Wow, good stats. Hold on a minute, that deserves a knowledge bomb. Done. That definitely deserves a knowledge bomb.
Are you dropping this from 40,000 feet?
Knowledge. Knowledge. Yeah, he's a young South African kid who qualifies to play for France next year. Watch out for this guy.
Well, this leads me nicely onto my conspiracy theory, right? Which is, how can a country which is effectively Anglesey, but on the other side of the world, New Zealand, and its second sport by some distance is league, afford the most expensive league player in the world?
Personally, I think it's all about the name and the brand of Sam Tompkins. He's the most recognised British rugby league player. That is going to bring a lot of revenue to the New Zealand team.
They're trying to build a brand, aren't they?
Yeah.
So are we saying that Sam Tompkins' deal is basically the same as the Gareth Bale deal?
Yeah.
/ the Johnny Wilkinson deal.
That's a good deal. He's a great player.
No, that's what I mean. Well, so is Sam Tompkins.
Yeah.
There's a marketing element to it, which is a depressing way to finish but there we go. Right then, let's move on for a second and just quickly touch upon the Pro 12, where there were rare wins.
This is incredible.
Go on then, Jay, our resident Pro 12 expert.
Yeah, well, when I heard this news, I immediately phoned my family and told them to build a bunker, because I thought the end of the world was nigh. Zebra, Benetton and Dragons all won on the same weekend. I couldn't believe it. Imagine having them on, like, an accumulator.
Oh, you get good odds on that.
You'd be going home on a yacht.
After all the stick I gave Zebra last week as well.
Yeah, can we just clarify? What is it? Zebra?
Who cares? Zebra?
Zebra, Zebra.
We used to just be able to say that winless team in the Pro 12, but not anymore.
Mm-hmm. Benetton beat Munster. Zebra beat Cardiff in Cardiff, and Dragons beat Scarlets. Interestingly, rugby union's not the only sport where there's been some incredible anomalies. Two from the world of football this weekend. John Obi Mikel scored his first goal in 256 appearances.
Wow.
And one of your favourite players, Cocker, Balotelli missed his first professional penalty.
Did. Then scored, then got sent off.
So normal service resumed.
Exactly.
Well, at least we don't have to ever talk about the Rabo Direct 14 or whatever it's called ever again, though. So that's that.
Can we not do a regular section?
Another anomaly is, hold on a minute,
we need the music one more time.
The Rabo Direct Pro 12 teams actually fielded a few internationals.
What? Really,
probably most shockingly of all that.
Yeah, in the Cardiff team that Zebra beat, Lee Halfpenny and Alex Cuthbert were both starting in the back three.
Just unheard of. Incredible stuff.
Wow.
I was looking at George North. That sounds a bit weird. George North stat, from the last 3 years, he's played 44
yeah,
games for Scarlets.
Incredulous.
But 34 international games. So he's played, in 3 years, he's played almost as many internationals as he has for his divisional or regional team.
Look because how good he is as a result.
I wonder how... yeah, exactly.
He's so fresh.
I wonder how he's going to cope with actually having to play every week.
I know.
Like,
no rest games at North. Not when they're paying £300,000 a year.
He's used to waking up at like 11 o'clock on a Saturday and going to watch the game from the Celtic Manor Spa. And now he's going to have to go and...
You know. Pre-match meal. Guest appearance with all the sponsors. Shake a few hands.
Yeah. But no, now he's going to have to play in Worcester on a Friday night or something in the rain. In the rain.
Pray for George. Right, then it's time for the dream team. This is so called because at some point one of us wakes up from having a little bit of a nap and we decide on an incredible topic for which to select a 15. And today's is actually inspired by James O'Connor. I don't know if you saw the story about James O'Connor getting dropped from the Australian rugby.
I saw a bit, but why don't you remind us?
Well, basically, he rocked up at Perth Airport after the game. And he turned up half cut and got removed from the airport by Australian police. Basically, he's been told to do one because his attitude's not right.
Right.
And he looks a bit like Justin Bieber, as well as acting like some sort of pop star falling out of Mahiki nightclub. So I sort of thought, how about with James O'Connor, the first name on the team sheet, a boy band 15?
Just one thing on James O'Connor before we continue. Wasn't James O'Connor meant to be the character reference for Kurtley Beale? Because they were both out at like 4 a.m. But because he was with James O'Connor, who's a stand-up guy, he's like, oh, well, you know, they're not getting anything.
We can't have had any bees.
Yeah, exactly. They were just out, you know, getting kebabs or something, you know. Well, when I say kebabs, chicken kebab and salad, I guess. I'm quite surprised that that news came out, and I'm quite surprised how harshly he was dealt with. Anyway, enough of that.
Are you really? I mean, if you looked at the wonderful article on eggchasers.com, you'd see that he's got a bit of a history.
I did read eggchasers.com and I did see the history.
What was that website again?
Eggchasers.com.
It's very good.
Yeah.
It's really very good. But he was released by Melbourne Rebels despite being an Australian international. He went missing on a couple of occasions during the Lions tour.
During the test,
during the Lions test. Like, yeah, during the actual
in the
test. In the matches, yeah.
In the third test, he was definitely missing for half of that.
And he got suspended during the World Cup. So he's got some form on this one. But who would we select in our boy band 15 then? Let's start up front. Front row. Come on, then. I can see Phil's desperate to chip in one.
Loose head prop. Stupid hair. Lots of stupid hair.
Oh.
Joe Marler.
Yeah, Joe Marler. I've got Joe Marler.
Frequently. He's had head work shaved into the back of his head. He's had orange Mohican and all that. Dimitri Zvazevsky.
I've got him as my hooker.
Looks like he could be...
It's like it would be Richard Hibbard if
Richard
he lost Hibbard. A few pounds, but Swarzewski is in
Richard
top
Hibbard
shape.
Richard Hibbard looks like Swarzewski after he let himself go after a few years. Like, Swarzewski coming out of rehab is Richard Hibbard.
So yeah, definitely Swarzewski gets the nod on that one.
Another hooker,
go on.
Who's massively into clubbing is Andrew Hoare.
What?
Clubbing baby seals, that is.
Oh, yes.
In 2005, he got prosecuted for slaughtering baby seals.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Nice.
The Animal Rights 15, I think, could be at a later date.
That's exceptional.
What about Matt Stevens? He loves a bit of singing. Yeah. He was doing it on that BT Rugby Tonight programme. Couldn't wait to get up and sing.
And he has led the pop star lifestyle, so yeah. Yeah.
Well, often in the toilets practising his lines.
Exactly.
And he was on, I think 2006, he was on X Factor, Celebrity X Factor. In fact, got a little bit of a snippet. This is Matt Stevens having a little sing-song. I could stay away just to hear you breathing. Watch you smile while you are sleeping. And it'd be easy, because you know how when you don't know the names, but there's a boy band, you could just go, it's the one with a massive head.
And, of course, there's also the boy band stereotype of the bad boy as well. Don't forget them.
Oh, we won't.
Okay,
sure.
Just saying.
any more front row contenders before we move on?
Yeah, another prop, another England international prop.
Ooh.
Corbisiero, who's done some rapping in his time, I think, on a few occasions.
Yeah.
Regrettably for him, I'm sure.
Keep it kind of quiet, people on a diet. Scrum is straight, term is right, I don't deny it. Test me, try it,
stop
me, don't fly it.
I'ma
grab the microphone and start to fly it. Up, up, high, grab the mic and make you cry. Told you before, we represent L.I. London Irish, you can't deny this. So, so sick, attendance, you can't buy this.
Wow.
Oh, God, it's painful, isn't it?
Corbisiero knocks Joe Marler out of the front row at a loose head prop. And apparently he does more rapping on the Lions DVD, which is going to be coming out. I don't know if that's going to increase or decrease sales, but we'll see. So we're going Corbisiero, Matt Stevens and Dimitri Swarzeski as our front row. That's a pretty solid start.
Yeah.
Locks.
There was an interview with Bacchus Botha when he described himself as a hard man and the rock star as Matt Field. Now, I'm not saying Matt Field is a typical boy band, but as South Africans go, he's fairly boy band-ish.
He's quite groomed, isn't he?
He is quite groomed.
For South African forwards.
I reckon there's one close to home. I think just think Courtney Laws.
He's
agile. I can imagine him busting some moves, you know, doing a little robot.
And he's got the tattoos as well.
So, struggling for second rows.
I really struggle for second rows.
O'Callaghan. I was thinking back in the day, he had that look.
Oh.
Only if the boy band song is Wild Rover or something like that.
Everyone's got to have an ugly member of the boy band.
Well, he could be like Anthony Costa, just room filler.
Well, if we're talking about just having an Anthony Costa flat nose, then Jack Berger could make an appearance.
Jack Berger rapidly becoming my favourite player, maybe in the world.
Wow.
We're struggling with locks.
Can you imagine a more awkward boy band member than Luke Charteris? Just like next to a load of 5'10" good looking guys and the 7-foot Luke Charteris gangling about.
Back row or any more second rows?
Yeah, maybe we could do with a hand.
We could do
the second
hand.
Row.
Yeah.
So I'll put the 15 that we managed to come up with at eggchasers.com and on the at Rugby Podcast, our Twitter account. But please help. Please help. Back row. I'm going to jump straight in with Sergio Parisse.
No, that'd be mine.
Model girlfriends.
Yeah, was she Miss Europe or Miss France, his girlfriend?
Pretty good, that, isn't it? I don't know if he's still playing, but just for his name, Remy Martin.
I can't picture him. Did he have a long blonde hair?
And it's a pretty gangster name.
It's a good name.
Listen to me saying gangster. So down with kids, aren't I?
What about James Haskell for the point of view that he's always getting his kit off?
Yeah, and he loves those T-shirts with the huge... You know, the V's that's come down to just above your belly button?
Yeah.
Just like Blake wears.
Yeah. Be wearing one tonight.
Nice.
I thought... I know you're probably going to disagree, but Chabal...
Which band is this?
Oh, no. this would be the death metal 15.
Well, no, you see, every I think a boy band has to have, like, a token, like, rocker. And I reckon Chabal would make a great token rocker.
Chabal would make a great boy band minder. No, absolutely not.
But it has inspired me for like a hard rock 15. Chabal would be potential captain.
Yeah, definitely.
So we've got, well, Parisse, Haskell and Remy Martin. I've got a picture of him, streaky blonde hair. There he is. Look at that.
Yeah.
Is he in? Is that a good show?
He goes in. Scrum half then.
Oh, where did
Danny Kerr.
Danny Kerr.
Mike Phillips.
Oh, Mike Phillips. Mike Phillips.
There.
No, definitely not Danny Kerr. Definitely Mike Phillips.
Either of them.
No, Mike Phillips is...
Mike Phillips was the... Read a couple of interviews when the Lions was on. And
Mike Phillips would take Danny Kerr's girlfriend with no problems whatsoever.
Yeah, definitely.
He would just walk in there. You.
One of the standard questions to the Lions players was... Who spends longest in front of the mirror? Or who's the most vain? And it was just every single time was Mike Phillips, Mike Phillips, Mike Phillips.
Yeah. Rightly so.
He's in then. Now, man, this is where it hots up. Fly half centres. Oh my word! How many names? How long have we got?
I think I've got the best looking man in the Premiership on mine at the moment.
Oh wow!
I'm not sure how I say his name. The Worcester fly half,
Ignacio Mires.
Mires, yes. Yeah.
Good looking fella.
Enrique Iglesias type.
Yeah.
Type chap.
But can launch a ball.
Yeah.
He's got a serious pass. It doesn't go where he wants it. But
are we seriously mentioning Mires before we mention Cipriani or Henson or Quade Cooper?
Yeah,
so many.
If Simon Cowell was making a boy band today, I think they've gone away from like having like the bad boy and all the things we said before. So like the more Justin Bieber or One Direction, they're all just good, good looking guys, bit PC. I think Danny Cipriani's look. It's not even boy band. It's boy band from the mid-2000s.
He's
got a dated boy band look. Even worse than being in a boy band.
He'd fit well into O-Town or someone like that.
Yeah.
You'd see him popping up on the ITV show, the one where they bring them all back. What's that called? I forget.
Reunion.
Oh, yeah. God. He was actually on a talent show.
Danny Cipriani.
He was on a talent show.
My Sweet 16 UK.
Yeah, and he
got rejected.
Yeah.
He got his top off.
And he's too small.
Yeah. The girl wanted some hunky men.
We're going to have to put it on the website.
To dance topless or something like that. And he was on there and got rejected.
Yeah, he was one of the series of teenage wannabe models who stripped off to strut their stuff on the British version of the hit television show My Super Sweet 16. But despite revealing an enviable set of pectoral muscles and a perfectly decent broad chest, the 20-year-old was told his services were not required.
He was 20?
Yeah.
No, he must be 20 at that time.
He was too slim.
Yeah.
Danny Cipriani was embarrassingly rejected.
I think if we were doing a 2005 boy band, he's in, but...
Yeah.
Modern days.
Gavin Henson.
Yeah.
Same problem, I reckon.
A bit old school for boy band. One for the One Direction type, when I was watching him yesterday, was George Ford. I think his clean-cut, slim image, he could fit right into just a
cardboard cutout.
These conversations were coming so homoerotic.
Quade Cooper, Cipriani... Yeah.
Ollie Barkley?
Ollie Barkley.
Ollie Barkley is an interesting shout as well. My goodness me.
Andy Goode?
Now we're talking. Oh, 10. Just an option.
Stuart Barnes.
Neil Jenkins.
Neil Jenkins.
Just an option.
No, hold on. Halloween's coming up. We'll do a Halloween 15 in a few weeks. We'll decide
it's by the 15 to threaten your kids with.
By the time we put a 15 on the website, eggchasers.com, we will have decided between the various 10s and 12s. Let's sort of get to the outside backs then.
In the centre, another one I had down. Mar Nonu, known for his dreadlocks and...
Mar Nonu?
Also known for his lack of neck.
Well, pink streaks and blue streaks in his dreadlocks.
Yeah, that's true.
He's worn eyeliner in the past.
Yes, he has.
To play in as well.
Is there more of a pin-up for a centre than Sonny Bill? Wait, this is getting really homoerotic, isn't it?
Blake,
for my wall.
What do you think, Blake?
I hate Sonny Bill. Can't stand the guy. But
you've got a poster of him on your wall, right?
I've got three.
Matthew Bassereau, not really.
Oh, come on.
Not really boy band, but he's kind of. He looks a little bit like Notorious B.I.G. or someone like that.
Oh.
He could be the rapping one.
We've only got a couple.
No, because Christian Wade's rapping.
Oh, moving out to the wings. Christian Wade, just that moment in the Lions
with his hairbrush, his comb.
When he had the comb in his hair when he was
in his suit. I was watching that. I was thinking, is this what professional rugby's come to now? Is this what it means to win a Lions test? Like comb my hair on TV.
I love that.
I quite enjoyed it as well. Actually.
On the other wing, I've got a couple here, right? Digby Ioane, that breakdancing celebration he did.
Oh, yeah,
he'd be the one that did the moves.
Awesome.
Or what about a bit old school? He's on telly now. Austin Healey. Is there any rugby player that loves the limelight more than that?
Austin Healey is a bad Matt Dawson. Like, their careers are basically parallel. So, like, he does dancing, Matt Dawson wins the dancing. He does Celebrity MasterChef, Matt Dawson wins Celebrity MasterChef. He plays for England, Matt Dawson wins the World Cup. You know.
he got on the bench for a couple of Lions tests. Matt Dawson threw a dummy to score the winning try.
Austin Healey doesn't say it, but he hates Matt Dawson.
Another winger? Retired. Tom Evans going out with Kelly Brook and now...
He was.
Are they broken up?
No, they broke up. Then she got with Danny Cipriani. Then he allegedly blah, blah, blah. And then...
Allegedly what, Tim? Because I've not heard this.
I don't know.
I thought she was going out with Jason Statham.
That was years ago.
I don't keep down.
There
with
was
kids,
Tom. There was Tom Evans after he retired.
So are you telling me she's quite into rugby players? just asking.
Loads and loads of wingers. Ioane, Wade.
Vondell could.
Vondell.
Do a similar job.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, fullback. Ben Foden
is the one for me.
Oh, of course. He's already got the celebrity tie-ins, or he
pop
did.
Star, pop star
wife.
Is it wife?
Yeah. Wife with a kid.
Una
Saturday.
I guess that's the name.
We'll tinker and whittle down a 15, which will be up online at eggchasers.com very soon or at Rugby Podcast. And you can give us your thoughts and tell us whether you agree, disagree, or got any other suggestions that we've missed. A little bit of a discussion now. We've got two special guests that are flankers as well. Current Sail Sharks captain Dan Braid, who's playing on the blind side, but is primarily an open side flanker, and Lewis Moody. Mad Dog Moody, both giving their thoughts on who was the best seven ever. Here's what they reckon.
There's two that come to mind. Michael Jones, obviously, but Richie McCaw's right up there as well. You know, I've competed with him for that jersey for a long time, but he is an outstanding player and he's still playing some very good rugby. But I think, I grew up watching Michael Jones all through the 90s and that, and I think Michael Jones is his anticipation on both defensively to be able to get in and put a big shot in, and also on attack with his running lines and just his explosive running game that he could bring in.
You know, there have been some epic sevens, I think, over the years, just some incredible individuals. But, you know, Richie McCaw, without doubt, I got to play against him many times, and just for his sheer consistency of form, I think you've got to say he is without doubt one of the best players in the world, let alone not just the seven. And I thoroughly enjoyed the tussles I had with him. I think you look back at Peter Winterbottom and he was, you know, you speak to all the old boys and the Neil Backs and the Dean Richards, and, you know, they all had utmost respect for what he did. So it's difficult though, because I got to play with Neil Back as well, and he was also, you know, one of the world's best flankers at the time. I think him and Josh Cronfeld were just, you know, leaps and strides ahead of everyone else. And it was interesting for me when they both came to Leicester. I had a real comparison. And Josh in particular taught me some great lessons about playing the game and the fact that actually there's no one way to be a seven.
Former England captain Lewis Moody, former All Black and current Sale Sharks captain Dan Braid there. There's been some brilliant sevens down the years, hasn't there? Some of them got mentioned right there. But lads, where do you see this best seven ever then?
I was with Michael Jones on that one. I mean, what was he voted third best Kiwi ever to play?
Who were the first two?
I can't remember.
Sean Fitzpatrick.
No.
You shouldn't drop a bit of knowledge without the full knowledge.
Half a knowledge.
You could have got a knowledge bomb then.
Oh, damn it.
I think after Nathan Budgett, the best seven to play the game is
brilliant.
Probably.
What a brilliant name to drop in.
We should have a sound and we should bring up Nathan Budgett organically every podcast.
When there is the actual budget. But we should just have loads of Nathan Budgett facts.
I wouldn't do it for Rupert Moon, but... Yeah.
We should just have you reading loads of Nathan Budgett history.
You played in international Welsh rugby and volleyball. So there you go.
Wow.
Anyway, so other than him, for me, it was Neil Back. Or best seven, although he played six, back to my original one. Richard Hill was an exceptional seven, but I actually think it was Neil Back.
I once got chatting to Neil Back on a night out in Leeds.
Name dropper.
We should have a little name drop noise.
Oh, sorry, like a clang.
Yeah, I'll get one. Hold on a second. There you go, a little name drop clang there. Go on, carry on.
So yeah, on a booze in Leeds a few years ago now, when he was coaching in Leeds, and I was at the Christmas markets in like a big German market hall tent, and there's a queue outside and two of my friends were in the queue, so I went outside to see if I could like sneak them in, and I spotted this guy just at the front trying to get in. I was like, excuse me, mate, is your name Neil? I was pretty drunk at the time. And he was like, yes. I was like, oh, my God, nice to meet you, blah, blah, blah. Big fan of rugby, like, incredible World Cup winner and all that. And I was like, oh, what I'll do... Because he was trying to get in. So I was like, oh, what I'll do, I'll go and find the biggest bouncer, the one who looks like he plays rugby, and say, we've got a World Cup winner outside, and I'll get you to get him in. So I went off inside. My two mates who were queuing up watching all of this watched Neil Back for the next 10 minutes, because I'd gone inside, bumped into a mate, and instantly forgot that I was had spoken to Neil Back. So they watched him for 10 minutes standing, waiting for me and a bouncer to return and allow him in.
How could you look at that face, which has been mashed so much,
Neil,
and then not be just petrified to do anything other than exactly what you just promised?
I met, get ready with the clang, Dean Richards at Cheltenham. I said hello. He kind of acknowledged me a little bit. I asked for a photo, and he told me in very stern terms, no. He might have even swore at me and then walked off.
Wow.
Yeah, it was quite shocking, actually. But I didn't promise to get him a bouncer, so...
We haven't mentioned George Smith. Surely he's got to be worth a mention. Oh,
he's on my list. Yeah, George Smith came back to Brumbies on a six-month contract after 3 years away, 3 years playing in France and Japan, and won Player's Player of the Season in on his six-month contract for the 10th time for the Brumbies. Record back.
Great knowledge, that.
I hear the George
Smith. Let's just respect the knowledge. Yes. There we go, knowledge bomb. Good knowledge bomb. So, he's a brilliant, brilliant seven.
Yeah. Do you see George Smith then as like being the pioneer of the modern ball snapping seven?
The jackal breakdown, definitely.
But also with good hands, quick about the park.
I always think that Neil Back was the original get to the breakdown, every breakdown first, and make a nuisance of yourself. And I kind of think that Smith took it to that next level.
Well, all the players that we've mentioned, I think, have sort of changed the game. Michael Jones changed what it meant to be like a modern day seven because he was so fit. He was just around the park and had unbelievable hands and gas and all the rest of it. George Smith, like you mentioned, amazing at the breakdown. Neil Back changed the mould because he went, no, you don't have to be massive.
Yeah.
You can be mobile and a little nuggety hard man. And then Richie McCaw, this is why I've got to go with him. He's just got a bit of all of it.
Yeah.
One last thing on Neil Back, you might like this. He was one of the few players to coach England before he played for them. He did strength and conditioning work before he played for England. Yeah.
Knowledge bomb.
Come on, Jay.
Can we get a shorter knowledge bomb?
Yeah.
One which doesn't drop from 200,000 feet.
Yeah, fair enough.
One of my favourite sevens playing at the moment, just to give some recognition to the smaller nations, the tier two nations.
Jack Berger.
Jack Berger would be up there, but I was going to say Mamuka Gorgodza.
I don't know.
Sorry?
Montpellier. Pick your position for him.
He can play lock or any three of the back row positions.
What a ball carrier.
What a specimen. He's incredible. Montpellier and Georgia.
Well, who would you go with then, Blake?
Michael Jones.
Michael Jones. I could go along with that. I could go with Richie McCaw.
I think, for me, Richie McCaw, the best.
A straight shot up between Smith and Back.
Fair enough. Have your say. Tell us what you think. @rugbypodcast on Twitter or eggchasers.com. Right, that was it. That was the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast for this week. Thank you very much for having a listen. Subscribe and we'll make sure the next one's delivered straight to you. Nice one. Nice one, Jay.
Cheers, Tim.
Nice one, Blake.
Thanks.
And thank you, Phil.
Cheers, Cocker.
Oh, actually, do you know what? I nearly forgot. We're going to be doing a little tiny podcast called Thank Ruckets Friday, which is going to be released every Friday, which is just a short little preview of the weekend's matches and a special rucked up interview this Friday with Leicester Tigers boss Richard Cockerell. So make sure you have a listen to that. And then that's in addition to the main podcast, like this one, that's going to be out every single Tuesday. And as a special treat, we heard from him earlier, let's be sung out by Matt Stevens singing on Celebrity X Factor back in the day. It's at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, and eggchasers.com is our website, isn't it, Matt? Yeah, it is.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.